It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy, Renee, and Alex are here. We're going to talk about the latest news, a little bit about Steve Wozniak's reaction to the Apple versus DOJ fight. We'll also talk about the App Store and why it could be a good thing or a bad thing, and answer some of your questions about the upcoming Apple event. It's all ahead next. Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Hi, everybody. It's time for our annual audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It helps us understand our audience better, know what you like and don't like, how you listen to the show. It also helps us tell advertisers what kind of people listen. But I promise you, your feedback is always kept personally anonymous. All you have to do is visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It'll just take a few minutes, and it'll help us make Twit even better. We really appreciate your support and any help you can give us. twit.tv/survey. This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 497, recorded Tuesday, March 8th, 2016. Take it to The Hague. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to harrys.com. For a limited time, new customers get a free trial and you just pay $3 for shipping by going to harrys.com/MacBreak. And by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used gadgets. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics or trade one in for cash. Give new life to a used device at gazelle.com today. And by LegalZoom. It's National Small Business Month. Get started today with an incorporation or LLC, plus legal advice from independent attorneys in 48 states. LegalZoom isn't a law firm, but they sure help you. Go to LegalZoom.com now and enter MBW in the referral box at checkout. It's time for the Mac Break Weekly Show, ladies and gentlemen. Everybody should whisper because this show is securely encrypted. No one can see it or hear it except you and me. And Andy Inako from the Chicago Sun-Times. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Leo.
He's in our secure enclave.
That's okay, because you can get at me if you have a piece of cheese.
The cheese wielder himself from Montreal, Rene Ritchie of iMore.com. Back from your Mobile Nations rally.
Yeah, we were all in Atlanta. Now I'm back just in time for a big block of cheese day on Mac Break.
Yay! Is it a coincidence that Big Block of Cheese Day is also International Women's Day?
No, that's awesome. I'll give precedence to the Women's Day. Forget the cheese.
Forget the cheese. I don't think Big Block of Cheese is an official holiday.
No, I think it's an Aaron Sorkinism.
Aaron Sorkin holiday. It's a good holiday. It's one I would celebrate.
So quick. If it's a good like Welsh like red dragon like mustard cheese.
Mm. Or a Wensley Day.
I would at least say that equal precedence, just long enough for the cheese to get in and then back to the women.
Oh, and also with us from parts unknown, but it looks like his home studio, Mr. Alex Lindsay.
It's actually my office. I just put egg crates up everywhere. You know, it's you never know.
You used to have that when you had the Pizza Course office in San Francisco. You always had soundproofing in your office.
I do not like echo. I just don't. Oh. I don't like echo. So I just like, you know, I make everything 18% gray, and then I cover it all up with. Because even just the feeling of 18% gray behind the diffusion makes me feel better.
So nice. We had Russell Preston Brown on Triangulation yesterday. Russell Brown is so much fun. Adobe's awesome. Kind of evangelist.
I took a course from Burt Monroy on Photoshop 2.5 in South San Francisco at the right by the airport. Yeah. And Russell Brown entered the room with a big wig.
Yeah, he seems to like the costumes.
Yeah, he was great.
He told the story he went to work for Adobe in 1985 when it was, remember, Adobe Type Manager and PostScript. And he told the story of how they got a call in 1988 from a guy named Tom Knoll. Actually, it was from his brother, John Knoll, who was working at ILM at the time, who said, my brother Thomas has written this really neat thing. The Knoll brothers had gone to Supermac, remember them? With something they called Photo Hut. And were turned down. Then they went to Aldus. Remember them? Creators of PageMaker? and were turned down. Russell Brown says, thank God we didn't say no. They licensed Photo Hut. Of course, it became Photoshop and made the fortune of many people, including the Knoll brothers and Adobe. It's a great story.
It was really just processing for at the beginning.
Yeah.
Just processed images.
Thomas Brown was a graduate student. He'd written, I remember in the early days of the Mac, it was black and white. On the first color Macintosh, he had written a routine to take, you know, jaggedy black and white images and anti-alias them using the color, you know, a gray pixel. And he was basically taking, you know, jaggy monochrome images and smoothing them out, making them pretty grayscale images. And that was the beginning of Photoshop.
Yeah. And the from what I understand, the plugin architecture was really so that John could write stuff that he wanted right. to use at ILM, and he wouldn't be working on the core code. You know, Tom could keep on working on the core code and John could, you know, update things and create. So most of the original plugins for quite some time were all what John wrote. You know, like to fix problems. And so there'd be all kinds of really interesting plugins that are in there that were to solve some specific problem that he had for some movie.
That's what you want. You want people who are scratching their own itch, right?
Yep. Yep, absolutely.
Steve Wozniak, I was going to bring up the Apple encryption case. I mean, how can we go a week without talking about it? Let's let Woz on Conan O'Brien do the talking. The
FBI's battle with Apple. What's your take?
I side with Apple on this one. First of all, I've always been very related, close to human rights. I'm one of the founders of the EFF.
Mm-hmm. First time in living history on network television that the EFF has received an ovation. You really have to wonder, did the audience even know what the EFF was? Okay, go
human
ahead.
Human rights, you got to say hi. For
human rights, give it up. High human five, rights. Give it up.
Once countries can come in and tell manufacturers, you have to make your products insecure. Computer security is so important today.
The government wants a backdoor so that they can say, look, if we really need to, we can get in there and see what was on this phone in case there was any kind of nefarious activity. And you say once
they picked a lame case. They picked the lamest case you ever could. The two phones owned by the people that aren't even convicted terrorists didn't have one link to a terrorist organization. Verizon turned over all the phone records, all the SMS messages, so they want to take this other phone that the two didn't destroy, that was a work phone. It's so lame and worthless to expect something's on it,
right?
And get Apple to expose it. But boy, I wrote a couple times in my life, I wrote something that could be a virus that could have spread itself on Macintosh computers forever. And each time I threw away every bit of code I'd written, I was so scared inside. You do not want to let something like that out. And once you create it, there's a good chance hackers will get into it. And then what if China says, Apple, you've got to give us a backdoor so we can get into any phone, even your government officials' iPhones, and inspect them anytime. That's wrong.
Yeah.
Security is an important thing now. Look how many people get hurt. Millions of people's accounts get exposed every day.
Okay. All right.
Right on.
I'm convinced. I'm with you.
Woz, look at that. He won over Conan and everything. He's good. I guess that's all we need to say. Right? from the horse's mouth, so to speak. The New York Times points out that it was an FBI error that they screwed up. That really, we were watching last week at this time, we were watching the congressional testimony. That really pissed off Daryl Issa and the Congress members of Congress. That the FBI screwed it up and now is going to Apple saying, hey, could you help us here?
Oopsies.
Yeah. Justice Department, of course, has gone back to the judge in Brooklyn we mentioned who turned the FBI's request down.
He didn't just turn it down, though. He knocked it back at them as though they'd insulted his mother on the way to the basket.
Yeah.
And then they want to go back.
Yeah. Craig Federighi writing in the Washington Post, a guest editorial. FBI wants to roll back safeguards that keep us safe, a step ahead of criminals. I think we found the talking point, right?
Well, I mean, it's interesting, and I think it was Daniel Dilger on Apple Insider who was pointing out that many of the same organizations were praising Apple not too long ago for making activation lock, which they said reduced violent crime because people could no longer just steal iPhones, hack them open, and sell them to somebody else. And now the story seems to rapidly be changing, and now it's Apple's evil and stopping the government from investigating terrorists.
Yeah.
And the whole narrative is bizarrely spun around by what I think is mostly the political arm of law enforcement, not necessarily the day-to-day arm.
Well, it's sort of like when people make complaints about the media. making the position that there is one voice for the media. There is not one voice for the FBI, even let alone all of law enforcement. So you'll see it's possible for what the FBI is doing right here to have been a legitimate screw up. And now they're trying to recover data that they could have gotten but didn't. While at the same time, another faction FBI saying, "Well, this is a good opportunity for us to try to get some political leverage to get some laws passed that we've always been wanting for quite some time." I'm glad that Waz spoke up about this, because not necessarily because he is the world's leading authority on security and privacy, but he is he really is one of the few people who are in sort of an elder statesman role. In technology, where you ask, "Well, what authority does he have to speak about anything?" And the answer comes back: he invented the personal computer. All right, he was on Dancing with the Stars, but he's also a person that people recognize as somebody who has been around the track. Who, even if he's not creating products right now, he's investing and he's talking to people. He's working with the next generation of engineers. So if he's saying something like this, there are a lot of people who were on the fence or didn't have an opinion that are at least going to remember that, well, Steve Wozniak, elder statesman, made this position. So what side do I want to be on?
Yeah, he really has standing.
Well, and I think that we're seeing more people with standing that are starting to lean against the rulings here. So I think that's the interesting thing, is you have everyone from, you know, either, you know, former heads of the NSA, when you start having this confluence of a lot of technology leaders, as well as people within the intelligence community, it seems, and human rights committees and so on and so forth, it really seems like this, the tide is slowly, you know, ebbing away from the FBI.
Yeah. Meanwhile, John Miller, who's the chief of the New York Police Department's counterterrorism group, was baffled by Apple's reluctance to help the FBI. He said Apple is choosing to help murderers. Murderers. I still don't know what made Apple change your minds and decide to actually design a system that made them not able to aid the police. You're actually providing aid to the kidnappers, robbers, and murderers who've actually been recorded on the telephones in Rikers Island. By the way, that's another issue, but we won't get into that. They're telling their compatriots on the outside, "Oh, man, you got to get iOS 8. It's a gift from God." And that's a quote, because the cops can't crack it. Cyrus Vance Jr., the Manhattan DA, has said he has 175 iPhones, that we don't have any warrants to search, but we can't get in them. But, well, sure, it would be nice if Apple would just help us out here.
I think that this is one of the things. I think that one of the real issues here is that with the FBI making this mistake, and again, it really feels like it's either they did it on purpose or they were completely incompetent, because they have 12 phones that they're having issues with. You have other law enforcement in New York that have 170 phones. I mean, if I had that kind of issue, I would know everything about exactly what the protocol is to get the data off. I mean, you know, it seems like. You know, it just seems like either you don't trust them because they're not being genuine, or you don't trust them because they have all of these issues and they're not doing it correctly. You know, like you don't want to trust them with the privacy either. So I think that, you know, the number of these and the fact that you would think that they'd be experts by now, and if they can't become experts by now, then there's something wrong on some level. And I think that, you know, one of the things that when we look at, you know, them talking about this, I mean, if we look at another idiotic law, this right to be forgotten, you know, Google now has, has almost 450,000 requests, you know, for right to be forgotten. And I think that they've already, they've removed 441,000 URL results with 348,000 and change requests. I mean, this is what Apple's, you know, trying to avoid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, look, they haven't removed them. They've just made them invisible to people within searchers within the same country where that request was filed. They've actually made it a little bit more granular just a couple of weeks ago to make sure that it's not people who are not affected by that law can see it, and also people inside the UK can find these results as easily as someone who's outside the UK can watch BBC content. You just buy a VPN program and say hi. Oh, I'm not. Pip, 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 pip. I am not from UK, you know, jolly old T-Crumb fellow. I still think that I find it a lot easier to imagine that the people who who made the mistakes that made that data inaccessible were making a stupid, grave error, or they were not following protocol, or they weren't being talked to by the right person, as opposed to the FBI wanting to try to force a court short on that way. I'd have to see a lot more strong evidence before I would even really consider that.
I would say 85% chance that you're right. I'm just saying it's one or the other.
It's a possibility.
And both of them do not give us should give us pause to give the FBI any more access than they already have if they can't handle what they have sitting in front of them.
All right. Here's another quote. And this one comes from Adi Shamir. He's the S in RSA. Inventor, one of the inventors of public key crypto. He says, even though Apple has helped in countless cases, they decided not to comply this time. My advice is that they comply this time and wait for a better test case to fight where the case is not so clearly in favor of the FBI. So there's a guy with some standing, invented public key crypto, and he says the Apple should help. See, it's not as – it really isn't all that clear, I think. We had a great conversation
on the plane back, and that just – I don't want to turn on anything anymore.
Oh, did you read that story about the journalist, the Washington Post journalist who – he's writing stories, he's filing, he's emailing using the internet on the plane, and the guy behind him as they're getting off says, hey, that was a great story, I really enjoyed it, but you might want to watch out next time you're using the internet on the plane.
I saw that. He was using the equivalent of dial-up or something to connect with.
You know, we had a great conversation on Sunday on Twit. Boiled it down to this. Right now, there's only one place that the law has kind of carved out to say, this is private, and no one has access to it, and that's your brain. That's the Fifth Amendment. You can't be compelled to testify against yourself. We can take your fingerprint. We can take your hair for DNA. We can take your blood. We can take anything, but you can't take the contents of somebody's brains. That's provided private. And the law has carved that out. That's not in the Constitution. Your brain is private. Over time, we've just kind of all agreed, okay, you know, of course, no means exists right now, but presumably in the future, means might exist to read your mind. And one hopes that the law wouldn't then be changed, but there'll be a test case. You know what? The same 100 years from now, the same conversation is going to be had. Oh, you know, Apple mind meld has a way of reading your brain, but they don't want to give it to the police. Police said, everything's in there. We would know if you were guilty. We could even know ahead of time if you were going to commit a crime. Report. We want that information. Now how do you feel? And what's happened is this phone has become an extension of your brain. You end up dumping, I know I do. I don't remember anybody's phone number anymore. I don't remember my calendar appointments or anything. It's all dumped into the phone. But the law doesn't necessarily extend the protection that it provides your brain to the phone. That's what the debate is about. And in fundamental terms, that's what the debate is about. And I think that's a really interesting debate. It's so weird to me
because if you have a really secure lock on your door, police can still break it down, but it's harder when they say, like, you can't have that lock, or we want to have a copy of your key and just kind of keep it at the station or keep it with the vendor. There are ways to get – I mean, we've seen jailbreaks for iOS 9. There are exploits out there that can be used to get into these devices, but they're not choosing to do that. They want to have Apple do it. And to me, that's a very subtle but very important difference.
Well, and again, I think that this is a much bigger case than even what's on the phone. I think that, you know, this precedent opens up the door for them to force companies to write code that allows them to eavesdrop on us. And I think that is a kind of a terrifying. And there's not many of these that I usually kind of assume. I definitely went through a tinfoil hat mode 20 years ago when I really understood what was going on. And I would, you know, all the way down to the point where when I went to the get my driver's license in Colorado, they required fingerprints. And so I burned mine off and then gave them flat fingerprints. So I paid all in cash and I was all like, screw you, you're not going to be able to. And then after a while, I realized that was kind of useless. it was a lot of work for nothing. And so I've kind of get that there's a lot of things that are being looked at, but I think that when we get to at some point, when we get to a point where the government is forcing companies to write new code to build new tools, I think it's all fair. You know, they want to build their own tools, they want to break into those things, they want to hack those things. I think that's, you know, the government That's what they're going to do. But I think when you start forcing the companies that we're supposed to trust to do that for them, that's the precedent that they want. And I think that that's the precedent that we absolutely can't provide. You know, I think that, the question is how long do these companies stay in the United States? If, you know, how long does this technology stay in the United States? How long does the server stay in the United States? I mean, how, you know, not all these countries. Now, there's going to be some countries that are going to use this to push the entire precedent, you know, so China, Russia, they're going to use this to force Apple to do that on their end. On the other side of that, you're going to have some countries that see a financial gain in making sure that they're not going to do that. And then you're going to end up with lots of secure servers that are, you know, and I think that we've just inadvertently, I think the FBI has created more of an arms race than they had before. I think now it's not just marketing for Apple. I think it's marketing for everyone to build much more robust security than they had before, because now everyone's awake to it.
The other day, I saw just good-looking guy on the CBC talking about the very first Macintosh ransomware, and he's here right now. Look at him, good-looking fella. I want to talk a little bit about a sad, sad day—the first ransomware on Macintosh, and how many people were affected, how they got infected, what Apple did about it, what you can do about it. Lots more to come. Renee Ritchie's here from iMore.com. Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Corps, from Chicago Sun-Times, of course. Andy Anatko. We are talking Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly. I don't know if you noticed, gentlemen, but I have a very smooth.
Gorgeous, Leo.
Beautiful, isn't it? I shaved this morning with my Harry's razor, and it's never felt so great. I learned something. It says in the book, shave with the grain of your beard, and I never had a grain in my beard, so I just started shaving in one direction, and now I actually get a better shave. I didn't realize that. My dad should have taught me that. Here I am, 59, finally learning how to shave, thanks to Harry's. I love getting up and facing my beautiful hair. I have a Winston, which I love, with the metal handle. I even got the copper winter Winston. Actually, I'm starting to the point now where I'm collecting Harry's handles. I have the Terman set as well. They're really gorgeous. So here's the deal. Harry's is one of these great companies that looked at how the business is done and said, hey, it's the internet era. We can do it better. In this case, that crazy notion that you should go and buy razor blades. First, get it, you know, you get the cheap handle, and then you buy the razor blades at $4 a pop. So expensive, they lock them up at the drugstore. It was crazy. I bought some Gillette blades before I found Harry's. This was the turning point. I had I was at Target or something, and I got them to unlock the razor blades, and I got an eight blade thing, and then I saw $32. What? I'm not buying gold here. So Harry says that's not good either. That's why they bought the factory and they make the blades and deliver them directly to you. No lines, no plexiglass cases to unlock. No wonder over 1 million guys now have made the switch to Harry's. So go to the website. Take a look at it. It's a great customer experience. You'll see how well made these blades are. They're designed for precision. They're designed for, you know, robustness. They also offer their foaming shave gel or the foam or the shave cream. I like the shave cream. It smells so good. So does the gel. And it's shipped right to your door. My wife is very sensitive to scents and chemicals and stuff. She's always saying, you know, if I use something besides the Harry's, she says, did you use something else? She loves the Harry's, though. Why pay $32 for an 8-pack when you can get them for half the price at harrys.com? Sign up today. In fact, we got a good deal for you. When you sign up for a shave plan, we're going to get you a free set. Free. So you get the starter kit, which includes the handle, a 5-blade cartridge, their foaming shave gel, and travel cover for free. You just cover the $3 shipping charge. That'll get you started. Go to harrys.com/macbreak. You don't have to, you know, take my word for it. You can try it. Of course, you can cancel it anytime. They're nice guys. Make it very easy. Harry's.com/MacBreak. Get started today with the best shave you'll ever have at an amazing price. Harry's. Harry's.com/MacBreak. So great. I used to shave with a sword, says somebody in the chat room.
A machete.
This is better. Trust me.
Machete don't shave.
This all started with a BitTorrent client called Transmission. We've used it. Everybody's used it. I think it's probably the number one BitTorrent client on Macintosh. Somebody hacked their website, and for a couple of days, when you downloaded Transmission from the website, you didn't get the transmission you thought you were getting. You got transmission with a malware installed, OS10 KE Ranger A, and it's ransomware. Now, this is something that's plagued the Windows scene for a couple of years, and it's very lucrative for the bad guys. It uses strong encryption, good encryption. I don't know about KE Ranger, but on the Windows side, CryptoLocker and its ilk use strong encryption to encrypt your data, and then pop up a thing saying, "Hi, you may notice your data is unusable." Well, if you were to send us something like 40 Bitcoin, that's what happened to the hospital in Pasadena. Actually, they don't usually ask for that much. That was $17,000, 40 Bitcoin. We will send you the key. You can unlock it. There's a lot of problems with this. First of all, if you give them money, you're funding cyber terrorism. But also, a lot of times, you don't get a key that works, or you never hear from them again. So, the solution to this is having a good backup. So, Renee, do we know anything more than what I just said, the basic facts of it?
No, I mean, you're spot on. At some point, Transmission had this installed, so people who downloaded it, and they figure there might have been up to 6,500 people who downloaded it during that window. Not all of those people would have installed it immediately, of course, but if you downloaded it and installed it, then you would be infected with these files. If those files hadn't phoned home yet and started doing the encryption process, you can go into Terminal and remove them. If they had, then if you're lucky enough or if you're smart enough to have a good backup strategy, you probably need to go back and roll. Use Time Capsule or Backblaze or
anything
something
that does versioning, which Time Capsule does, will be okay. Because what happens, of course, is once that's encrypted, it's backed up by any backup tool. So the most recent backup, as soon as you discover that, you're probably already backed up the encrypted version of the file. But like with Time Machine, you can go back versions, and one of them will be unencrypted.
Yeah, and the interesting thing here, the good and bad thing here is it only affected you if you turned off Use Mac App Store apps only, because, of course, Transmission is available on the web. But they did have a trusted Apple certificate, a developer certificate.
Yes, that's the key. The default, and most people set it up so that I don't want to just limit myself to the App Store, but I have that middle setting, which is, as you said, App Store or signed by Apple. In this case, it was.
Yeah, so that means that it would launch. If you double-clicked on it, it would actually launch and let you go through the setup process.
How did they do that? How did the bad guys modify the file but not modify Apple's the bad guys did?
Yeah, they applied as a normal company, as a legitimate company. I forget the name of it, but there was a legitimate company certificate on it. They acquired it. They signed with that certificate, put it on there. Now, of course, this minute Apple is alerted, the good part of this process is that they can add the definitions to XProtect, which is the built-in anti-malware function of OS X. And they also revoke the certificate, which means that if you hadn't launched it yet, the next time you try to launch it, Gatekeeper activates and says, "This is corrupted. Please trash it immediately." And it just will not allow it to run on your system.
That's a good system. KE Ranger asks for a single Bitcoin, a mere $400.
Yeah. There's no guarantee that if you pay it, you'll actually be unlocked. There's no guarantee that they're not leaving stuff on your computer to lock it again in three or 6 months and make sort of extortionware out of it. So the ideal is always have a good backup strategy in place.
The certificate was given, Apple gave the certificate to a Turkish company.
Yeah.
It has revoked the certificate. That's kind of something that is important to know, which is that Apple apparently doesn't do a lot of due diligence before awarding a certificate. It just gives them a kill switch.
Yes.
So that's...
Well, I think it does... Like, we applied for one, I think, when we started doing our apps, and you had to go through a fairly rigorous process. Like, you had to prove that you're a company.
Oh, okay.
They double-checked a whole bunch of stuff. They had to make sure who was signing for the company and that person was on the company. I don't know what it may be different given the laws and jurisdictions in Turkey, but it was quite... Like, we had the problem because Mobile Nations is doing... Like, Smartphone Experts is doing business as Mobile Nations, so they wouldn't accept Mobile Nations. We had to do it as the original company name.
Right.
There was some rigmarole to get it set up, so it wasn't an easy process.
Steve Wong is asking on Twitter, if you had Transmission and ran the normal update, would you have been infected?
It was in the installer. So that's the interesting thing about this. The other reason is, like, you can't trust the installer anymore either, obviously. But if you download some apps, you download the entire app again and then you replace it. Some apps, it does an installation in place and relaunches itself. I'm not familiar with Transmission's process, so I don't want to ever say somebody is safe if there is some chance of risk. So I would just burn the app to the ground and reinstall it fresh from the website if I had any.
It's okay now on the website. It's fixed.
Yeah.
And this is an open source project, so it was probably fairly simple for a bad guy to download everything and add this. The infected transmission installers added an extra file called general.rtf in the transmission.app contents resources directory. So you could open the, you know, right click, show contents on the transmission app and go to the contents resources directory. Look for general.rtf. It is not an RTF. It's a MACO format executable.
And so there is a myth. Some people believe that open source software is inevitably safer. And as we learn, you know, Macintosh isn't safer. Open source isn't safer. Just because you can look at the code doesn't mean there's someone looking at every, you know, the billions and billions of lines of code. You have to be careful no matter what kind of software you're running.
And Scooter X in the chat room is telling me that what the transmission folks have done, which is great, if you update to 2.92, it will detect and remove the malware installed by a 2.90, the rogue 2.90 install. Now, that's a little nerve-wracking because you'd have to run the app, and there's always a possibility. Do we know of anybody who got bit, was encrypted?
I haven't seen anyone actually say it. They just think they've. I've seen mostly just potential numbers and methods for removing it, but I assume, I think it was Palo Alto that,
yeah,
the researchers that caught it. Yeah,
Palo Alto Networks, their security researchers. This is their, I'm looking at their website, the post by Claude Shao and Jin Chen. They detected it. Probably somebody reported it, I would guess. And so
the kind of person running transmission might also be the kind of person running packet sniffers and running inspectors to see what processes are running permanently.
Would
on
little
their
snitch
computers
help you in something like this?
It might. So some of the things they were recommending, and I hate saying recommending because this is not a mainstream solution, is that you run a bunch of monitoring tools that sort of looks for these kinds of changes, looks for new persistent applications, monitors network activity.
I don't think little snitch would necessarily help because all it does is tell you, warn you if there's outbound activity that you haven't seen before. So I don't know if there'd be outbound activity before you got encrypted.
Before it calls its command and control and then starts the encryption process.
Right. I don't know. Is there, yeah, maybe there's, is there, if there's command and control over like a bot out there, maybe.
I believe they said it takes a couple of days for it to phone home and start.
Right. It was supposed to take effect yesterday.
Yeah.
So, again, Apple's revoked the certificate, so you wouldn't be able to install it if you downloaded it over the weekend and you had a bad one. Gatekeeper will block it. Yeah. And they've modified, and this is actually really great, this X-Protect. Why don't you tell people about that? I don't know if everybody knows about that because it happens behind the scenes.
Yeah, so it's basically, I think people are familiar with this on the Windows side, at least. There's it's first-party anti-malware, and it basically it runs on OS X. Apple continually updates the definition, and it detects for known malware signatures when they're trying to get onto the Mac. Because you need them, it's just, things are so complicated now, you have to have multi-level security. You have to stop things from getting on there. You have to stop things from launching if they do get on there. You have to have systems in place to prevent them from getting out of the sandbox of whatever they manage to infect, if they do manage to infect those things. So X-Protect is that first line, is those definitions that tries to stop anything from getting on your system that is known to be harmful.
Very good.
And it's interesting, especially now, because, you know, the old theory was that, you know, there was no viruses or malware on the Mac. And part of the reason for that was economics. The Mac market share was so small that it literally was not worth people's time to go out and create these programs. And it was resilient enough that you probably wouldn't get a lot of victims. And if you can't scale it, then you're putting an awful lot of effort into getting just a few people. But once you can find something that can infect 100, 1,000, 10,000 people, you build it once, you deploy it, and then you hopefully get, you know, small amounts of money. They're smart. They don't ask for a huge amount of money from everybody. They try to make it almost like patent trolls. They try to make it low enough that people will pay it.
Just a Bitcoin. Surely you have one Bitcoin lying around.
Absolutely. And when you get to a certain amount of people and it's easy enough to make the software, that's when you start seeing little outbreaks like this.
Yeah. Actually, $400 is not an insignificant amount of money. And if you got 1,000 people, you know, and that 6,500 downloads in 2 days, you could easily have 1,000 infected computers.
Yep.
That's $400,000. That's not insignificant. And some guy in Turkey, probably an out-of-work programmer.
There was an episode of The Good Wife, I think, where they went through this where all their computers got encrypted and they kept trying to find out, how do we pay you? And it was harder and harder to actually pay the person.
Don't pay them. Law enforcement will tell you that. The solution is have a good backup. And if it didn't get bit good news, this is a little warning bell for you to get something. Lots of, you know, Carbonite, our sponsor Carbonite, works. As you mentioned, Backblaze, Time Machine works. Mm-hmm. Something that does versioning.
Even Dropbox. Like, I keep my documents holder on Dropbox, so a copy of everything I have is on Dropbox.
Yeah. Now, the problem is if you have continual backup to Dropbox, at some point the encrypted files will get backed up. So that's potentially a problem. So you want something with versioning. Actually, I don't know if Carbonite does versioning on Macintosh. It does on Windows.
That's one of the
I've
reasons
gotten
why
older versions from Dropbox. I don't know about that either.
Oh, have you?
Yeah,
oh,
okay. I think. Yeah, you can rewind on Dropbox.
That's one
of the reasons why part of a backup strategy should include an air gap of some kind, meaning that you've got at least one backup that is completely in Amber. It's on if you've got your documents folder on a flash drive and you've unplugged it and it's in a drawer somewhere, or you've got a backup hard drive that's in a drawer somewhere. Part of my strategy is that I have a separate NAS that does backup, so that there is definitely a place that for important documents, there are two or three places that no automated software can get at it, so that in a worst case scenario, I think with my current strategy, the very worst case is that I've got everything that I did as of at worst about 2 weeks ago. So that so long as I can get at this physical media that is not attached to anything during those 2 weeks, it's not being backed up. Nothing can touch me except for losing 2 weeks worth of data.
And for the folks that are overly paranoid, I have about every quarter, I have the key documents. There's photos and certain things. There's a little bit of an expense to it, but the most important photos and the most important other bits are saved on drives. And oftentimes I will, about once a quarter, every 6 months at the most, have another drive that actually holds those data. And right now it's not that much. It's less than a terabyte that is not been updated. I have this little library of stuff, because if I get hacked, I want to be able to go back. You know, I don't want to ever have written over that. And it has saved me a couple times when I've had bad drives and stuff like that. It's probably a little excessive. And at some point, I usually, you know, I don't keep them forever. But, you know, I want to make sure that I have 6 months to a year of backups that I can, you know, run back to that I wasn't constantly updating, so that I don't possibly get something into the middle of it. And if it's something was there for years, then I'm in trouble.
Andy, I think you posted this article from Business Insider. A battle for the future of the App Store is brewing. We've been talking about this for I almost want to say years now. In fact, I remember when the App Store first came along, it concerned me. I was over concerned. It didn't turn out to be a problem, but the idea that all apps would have to be approved by Apple, and there were limits to what, of course, the App Store allowed. Casey Newton in The Verge wrote a long piece last week quoting an app developer named Pixite, which makes photo editing software for the iPhone and Android. Their revenues in 2014 went up to $1 million, but of course then Google Photos came out, and that kind of killed that. They said at first the store looked like the promised land for developers. In its earliest days, you'd hear success stories of programmers quitting their full-time jobs to focus on iPhone apps they made as jokes that turned into smash hits. But as the market got more crowded, app developers had to work harder to get customers and keep them. Clash of Clans has Liam Neeson doing its ads. Arnold Schwarzenegger is doing ads for another competing game.
Think Strike.
It's crazy. Why are people worried about the App Store?
It's a two-pronged sort of thing. Number one, that every company likes to be able to control its own destiny, and developers feel as though they become, in effect, a subsidiary of Apple, or in Microsoft's case, a subsidiary of Microsoft, that if you have the ability to simply write apps to whatever standard that you feel is best for your users and best for your product without interference, then you can basically transcend what the operating system can do. You can transcend what the hardware can do. And so when you're limited to a set of APIs, when you're limited to a set of rules, it doesn't allow you to innovate. The second problem is that oftentimes Apple will really put a lot of demands on a developer that the developer feels has nothing to do with their own business and has everything to do with Apple's business, such as if you want they might want to get access to this data API, but if they want to access that API, they also have to support every other API, which means that the windowing system, for instance, that they have that works great for their UI is no longer compatible with this. And so now, instead of spending 3 weeks of project time adding this one new feature they wanted to add with this new API, now they've also got to find taken 3 or 4 or 5 weeks to rewrite their entire windowing system to make it compatible, even though windowing has absolutely nothing to do with how this app functions or any extra value to the user. So they feel as though they're helping Apple to look a lot sexier with OS features, even though these aren't features that are going to benefit their own company or their users one tiny bit. And then you get to the other this is like the latest round of discussion. You also get to the problem where the App Store model kind of prevents a lot of developers from having that sort of intimate relationship with their customers. I'll use the analogy of how I relate to the artists who do my favorite web comics and who write some of my favorite blogs and news blogs, where I feel as though I know Danielle Cassetto when she does her Girls with Slingshots, or Scott Kurtz when he does PvP Online, because I have a one-to-one relationship. They are serving me their product directly. If they were working through a syndicate, I wouldn't feel that way, and therefore Scott and Danielle and these other creators wouldn't have the ability to know, here's what Andy likes, here's my readers likes, they're really responding to this character, so I'm going to give more story precedence to these characters, or that t-shirt that I just offered as a whim is selling gangbusters, and people are ordering them 2 or 3 or 4 at a time, so I'm definitely going to do more shirts like that. They feel as though that they don't have the ability to build that sort of relationship and have that sort of knowledge of their customers that will help them to be more responsive to them, because Apple kind of in the guise of protecting consumers from the praying hands of being exploited by their software providers are in a way preventing those software providers from giving them better service. So I'm not sure if a crash is coming so much as I think that there's going to be a point at which a lot of developers are no longer going to be inclined to sell things through the App Store. We've already seen a couple of high-profile pullouts. The most erudite one, of course, was Rich Siegel, who decided that, and his partner at Bare Bones, who decided that BB Edit, it's just not worth all the amount of work they have to do for the limited reward of having a visibility in the App Store. It's just no longer worth it. And so they always sold their product directly to consumers, and now that's exclusively how they make their product available.
It's funny that, you know, all the things I was worried about with a Mac App Store are actually becoming a cause for concern on Windows. Tim Sweeney, who is the guy behind Gears of War, he's at Epic Games, wrote an editorial in The Guardian saying Microsoft wants to monopolize games development on the PC. We must fight it. And it's because they have this universal Windows platform initiative, and they basically they're pushing for everything to be developed for this closed store platform.
That's a particularly big problem with games, because you have no appreciation for exactly how clever those developers are, how good they are at finding hidden pockets of extra processing power that's inside a platform. That's the reason why when a new gaming platform comes out, the first games are really, really good, and it's using all the features that the new game platform and the new hardware gives you for free. But then the second, third, fourth generations, it's like an entirely new piece of hardware. It's not because Microsoft has improved the software of the Xbox One. It's because developers were able to figure out that if we do an end run under this little bottleneck, we can actually increase the frame rate significantly, given that we don't need these atmospheric effects for this scene that we're doing. That's a way that we can make things a lot more responsive. And here's a way we can make our inputs a lot faster and a lot more reflexive. And here's how we're supposed to only get 4 channels through this signal. Here's a way we can get actually 6 channels out of it over and over and over again. But when you are limited to exactly what the maker lets you do, that means that you can't make a game that's as good as it can possibly be, and that is just fundamentally frustrating.
This did not happen and it was one of my concerns with the Mac App Store, but it did not happen on the Mac App Store, but it is starting to happen on the Windows side. This is what Sweeney writes. The specific problem here is that Microsoft's shiny new universal Windows platform is locked down, and by default, it's impossible to download UWP apps from the websites of publishers and developers, to install them, to update them, and to conduct commerce in them. Outside of the Windows Store, you just replace the Mac Store or the iPhone Store with Windows. And, you know, that was the concern a lot of people, and myself included, had. There is still a brisk on the desktop, there's still a brisk ecosystem outside of the App Store, but there isn't on the iOS side. I mean, it's App Store or nothing.
It's super interesting because for a long time, I love indie apps. If you look at the home screen on my iPhone, it's almost all indie apps, everything from the Tweetbots to the Fantasticals. I love them dearly. And I was just saying, Apple, I don't know why they're not doing this. Why aren't they doing upgrades? Why aren't they doing trials? Why aren't they doing this or that? And it's super frustrating, especially when a lot of your friends are indie developers and this is how they've always made their money. But it was interesting to me that the last time I was out there, I met with an indie developer, a really well-known one, and whose name I'm not going to use because they believe their views would be highly unpopular amongst their friends. But they sort of were rethinking their future and not saying that I need to be outside of this, but that I don't understand that there is a fundamental change that's been happening. That's sort of the invention of pop apps. And when we were talking about it, it was like almost like when wooden toys started to become plastic toys and the mom and pop toy stores became Toys R Us. And you did lose that direct contact with your customers. And you did learn, you lost all that artisanal, that beautiful work that went into it for years. And now you have very low cost, very cheap, very mass produced plastic toys. And you hear a lot of things like if Apple pulled this lever or that lever, and then you look at the Google Play Store where they're far fewer restrictive, they have far fewer rejections, all of these things are way more open, and they have the sum total of zero better apps. I mean, some people like launchers, but launchers aren't the apps that change the world. It's apps like Uber, it's apps like Instagram, and those apps have proven to be just fine on iOS. Games like Candy Crush are making a fortune on both platforms, and they're absolutely not the apps that I'm interested in, but I come from sort of this golden age of computing when things did grow from independent developers like, Rich Siegel, whose app you'll have to take out of my cold, dying hands one day. I use it every day, but I don't think my mom has ever heard of it, and I don't think the millions and hundreds of millions of people who are now coming into computing through smartphones have heard or even think about all these beautiful independent apps that to me are the cornerstone of the experience. And I think we are really in a change, and you have sort of the developers who existed before the advent of mobile and app stores and the very beginning years when there was a gold rush into the ones coming in now, and where it will be sort of just like Amazon is putting little bookstores out of business and Walmart is putting little general stores out of business. These massive companies are going to be the ones owning the future of apps. And even if you say like, we're going to protect you from like Apple's going to provide all these new incentives to make apps more valuable again, doesn't stop a VC or Amazon or Google from making a free version of your app anyway. The way that apps are profitable and successful has completely changed, and I'm not sure there's any going back.
Well, and I think that also this is a trajectory that happens in almost every industry. So whether you're talking about oil or you're talking about the railroads or you're talking about the movie industry, there was a rush where suddenly anybody could do it at any point in time. They didn't have to have business sense. They didn't have to have marketing sense. They had a good core of an idea, and they were able to be in the right place at the right time. And then, almost always that eventually gives way to a winnowing of the market where, out of that comes larger companies, and out of that comes people who really understand, either really understand their technology or really understand marketing or a little bit of both. And so I think that what we're seeing here is what I would consider a natural maturation of the market, which is that you really do have to really understand how you're going to make money at the business that you're doing, how you're going to market it, how are you going to grow it, and have a clear idea of what that looks like. And I think we're going to see another set of companies coming out, and I do think it's harder now. It's going to be harder to quote unquote break in. There's so many apps out there that probably already do most of what you thought of. So, and if you come up with something original, you have to. I just think that's the and it isn't going to be as easy as it was before. And I think that's kind of just a reality of any industry that begins to mature.
Well, but that's the real problem, I think, is not maturing the ability of a company to compete and mature. It really is almost I don't want to say First Amendment, but you want to give programmers and creators as many opportunities for free expression as possible. And think about how podcasting works, where anybody can simply record audio and release it, and they've got a podcast. Doesn't matter if they're using the microphone on their laptop and they're typing while they're using that microphone. Doesn't matter if they keep burping into the microphone. Doesn't matter if they're just talking about a nail hole in a piece of wall stud that's 8 feet away from them, and they're so high that they forget this talk for 20 minutes at a time. Nobody can stop them from doing that, and that's the reason why there are so many fundamentally and heroically bizarre and wonderful podcasts out there. We can have fundamentally wonderful and bizarre apps out there, and I can download a wonderful, bizarre, and stupid, heroically stupid app for my Mac or for my Raspberry Pi or any Mac or any PC that allows me to simply download a piece of arbitrary software and run it. But once we have a problem with iOS, for instance, where a piece of software cannot run on it unless someone who is not attached to that creative process said, "All right, we think that our users should be able to take a look at this piece of software." I mean, Apple famously had its ban on flashlight apps and fart apps, and it's not as though the world was waiting for a great fart app to be out there. But if they're going to turn down something that 999,999 people agree is stupid and a waste of time, you're still denying it to that one person who's kind of curious about it and is kind of interested. And you never know when you're going to get to, when you're turning down the next Thelonious Monk because you don't understand that kind of music and it's just noise anywhere and it's not good enough. So that's why as user positive as a lot of the controls that Apple puts on the iOS App Store are, we have to acknowledge that there's also a cost to that because programming and game development, particularly, they are creative arts, and sometimes you cannot understand somebody who's taking something to the next level, and that's the reason why Picasso paintings didn't sell at the very beginning. That's why Van Gogh sold only one painting in his lifetime. He was a nut until everyone caught up with him, and then he wasn't a nut anymore.
Well, but I think
it's kind of life, isn't it? You're a nut until you're not.
Yeah. Yeah. I based my career on this.
But I don't see a lot of people. I mean, I see a lot of people complaining about it, or some people complaining about it. I don't see a lot of people jumping to Android to solve that problem where they have a lot more freedom. I think that part of the issue is that and some of them have. I mean, I think some of them have decided to go that direction. But I think that the vast majority are trying to figure it out in the iPhone ecosystem because there's a lot. I think traditionally there's been a lot more money in the iPhone ecosystem, even though it's a smaller part of the market. And I think that some of that has to do with the controls. Some of that has to do with the ease of, I don't have to worry about certain things. Things are going to kind of work through there. And I think so I don't necessarily think that all of it's perfect the way that Apple does it, but I think that it is a fragile environment. And I think that changing those things may change that environment where it becomes more difficult. I think that, given the price of apps, I buy them fairly often and I don't worry about them. I don't worry about, whether they're going to be, there's going to be, malware or other things. Maybe I should more than I do, but it's a very easy to use ecosystem.
But you still buy on the desktop, I bet you, a lot of apps that aren't in the App Store.
Rarely.
So really?
For me, if an app is more than less than $100 and it's not on the App Store, it's got to be, I have to die for it. Like, it's not.
Really?
Like, it's, I've kind of stopped, now there are apps.
You don't
that
worry
I use.
About a monoculture kind of killing creativity, as Andy's described?
I restart my, I get a new computer and I go into the App Store and I just click everything going down, and then I go back and I have lunch, and when I come back, my computer is the way it was before. And the thing is that is so valuable to, it used to be this thing that I'd not want to update my computer, not want to move to a new computer because I was like, oh, now I have to figure out where all the installers are and where all my serial numbers are, and then I have to do this. And I think that those are the kind of things that I don't have to do anymore. And so there are definitely apps, whether it's the Adobe apps or Playback Pro or Nuke or other things that are high end that I get that they don't want to give up 30%. I'm going to use that product, for a variety of reasons, and I'll work with them directly. I wish that they were in the App Store, make it easier. But I understand for those large costs. But for the smaller ones, it's just too much trouble for me to deal with little apps that I'm going to have to go find and figure out how to install and everything else. And so, and there's a handful of apps that I've done that with in the past. And every time I install them, and they're, inexpensive apps, unless they're specifically, I bought them because they break the Mac App Store, like Little Stitch or, whatever. It's just like, oh, I can't believe I'm doing this. And I really lean towards things that are Mac App Store. If given two applications right. that close to each other, like, oh, they almost do the same thing, I'll get the Mac App Store one because I just don't want to deal with
it. It does make it easy when you get a new Mac.
What's funny for us is that for every complaint we get that, you know, that maybe the App Store is too controlling, from especially from developers, we get a bunch of complaints from people who just say there's too many apps in there, that they wish that there'd be less, that there's so much noise, the discoverability is terrible, they don't need a million apps, they only need maybe, you know, a few thousand really good ones.
If you don't like the Mac App Store, go use the Windows App Store.
Well, but imagine
get back to me.
People who come from console models, like, the development is so different. It's thousands of dollars for an emulator. It's really hard to get your apps in there. There are only a few apps available, and it's very clean customer experience, and it's a very high quality, you know, especially the previous days, it's a very high quality experience, and the App Store isn't that either. I think one of the issues is it's not a flea market. It's not a complete open flea market where anything goes, but it's not a highly curated boutique either. It's something that has sort of the stuff you want, but so much of it, you can never really find exactly what you want, and then it becomes, you know, a consumer issue.
Yeah. Peter Bright, our friend Peter Bright at Ars Technica, says, rebuts Tim Sweeney's editorial on The Guardian, saying, the PC, honestly, is a bit of a mess. We really need the universal Windows platform, because the PC platform is, and so it's clear there's two sides to it. The walled garden has some advantages. It also has some strong disadvantages. And I think right now, Apple, the way Apple's done it on the desktop is a nice balance. You could argue that on the phone and the tablet, it's not, it's a little bit more locked
down. It lets transmission in, but it also stops a lot of this.
Yeah, right. But it makes more sense on a mobile platform. You really do want to kind of constrain the mobile platform. And Apple gets some real advantages on iOS in battery life and other things by being very restrictive.
There's no perfect system.
There's no perfect system. There are pros and cons to each. Yeah. Let's take a break. Come back. We're going to talk more with our panelists. Of course, it's really nice every Tuesday to get together with you guys because they know everything. Andy Anatko from the Chicago Sun-Times and Alex Lindsay from PixelCore, Renee Ritchie from iMore and Mobile Nations. What did you do at Mobile Nations meetup thing?
So one of the things is that we're a highly dispersed company. So, like, my boss, Kevin, lives in Winnipeg, and Phil, who runs Android Central, is in Florida, and Dan, who runs Windows Central, is in Boston. And we usually only see each other at CES, but then we're all so busy we can't actually spend any time together. So this year we decided that we'd send less people to CES and then all get together in end of February, beginning of March, and just, you know, have a week together to talk, or a weekend together to talk.
Looked like fun. I saw your pictures and Serenity's pictures, and
it was going to be fun, but then they all had to review their Samsungs, so it became work fun.
But you got to play with three different S7s.
Yeah.
Because you have three different editors that had S7s. That was a weird thing, though, because I got mine just because I bought it. T-Mobile sent me mine last week. And then today the embargoes went off, and everybody suddenly is reviewing the S7. I feel like, gee, I should have made a bigger deal of the fact that I had this a week ahead of everybody.
As much as people criticize Apple PR for being controlling, they are just super well organized. I mean, last year, Samsung Canada just gave out the phones and said, hey, do whatever you want with them. And then reviews were coming out while the American media was losing their minds. Right. And this year, they just said, carriers, go ahead, ship. And again, people are getting their phones while all the people who have review units can't say anything about it, and they're losing their minds.
It's kind of funny.
But they're also not having to pay for phones.
Yeah. It cost me $800 for this privilege.
I'll also say that one thing that's sort of been on my mind, and I don't feel as though this sort of organized having embargo dates all end for everybody at the same date. I'm not saying there's anything nefarious about it. I'm just saying that one of the side effects of that is always going to be that there is going to be a huge flood of media attention, all coordinated on this one day when Samsung or Apple or any other or whatever company is arranging this can time it so that they can take advantage of all the attention that it's getting. And if instead they either went to a lottery system or if they simply said, okay, our Canadian subsidiary is going to send those out on this day. We're going to end US on this day. We're going to end in the UK on that other day. You feel as though it feels a little less like, as a member of the media, you're being conscripted as part of the marketing plan.
That's why I buy. I mean, I'm lucky. I feel lucky that I can afford to buy these because 99 out of 100 times I'm the one who's a week behind because I have to wait till it comes out and buy it. It's funny because Harry McCracken was on Twit on Sunday, and I know he had one. But he couldn't even say that he had one. So I'm talking all about it, and he's just got to go.
Well, one of the things, like Leo, you're an influencer. Like, people will wait and hear your opinion. Like, they don't necessarily want to know about the galley. They don't necessarily want to read a review. They want to know what you think about it. But not all journalists have that. So for them, if some people have it earlier and get to review it earlier, no one else cares by the time they get to it. And literally no one else cares, and that's how they feed their family. Right. So for them, it becomes a problem.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't I'm not a print journalist. I don't have any lead time. Yeah. And frankly, I don't need to be the first to review anything. I appreciate your saying those kind words. I don't think that that's the case, but I don't feel an urgency. As long as we can get it roughly when everybody else is getting it and people are making the decision whether to buy it or not.
Like 2 weeks from now, no one's looking for Galaxy S7 review.
Yeah. Well, the truth is, I don't know if that's true. I mean, yeah. That's one of the things about Google search is great, is you don't really look at the review until you're in the market for a phone. And then having all those reviews out there, even 6 months or a year later, is very useful.
Yeah. When I write something, I'm hoping that I'm writing something valuable enough that someone who is not necessarily buying an iPad the first week it's coming out, when they've got the money 3 months from now, or when their last iPad dies 6 months from now, I'll still have something that's in-depth and valuable that will stand out. I think that there's a need for all kinds of coverage. There's definitely to play my own devil's advocate. There's also a lot of people that are first hearing about the Galaxy S7 on the week that it's being released, and that's the time when they've got their first level of interest in learning more about it. So there's need for pretty much everything out there. So I'm not denigrating anybody else's approach.
Oh, likewise. Like, I don't even think the review is that important. I would much prefer to write help. Like, the minute I get the phone or the watch, my mission is to write as much help content.
Yeah, me too. That's a great positioning.
Review is kind of a secondary concern.
Yeah,
I think I've often thought that the reason why you don't call you call your site iMore is because the missingmanual.com we're already taking.
Right.
Well, Serena did a great thing about Apple Pencil, by the way.
Oh, I love that.
I don't know if that's in the show notes. That was
what did she say? What did she talk about?
She did a cartoon comic book review of a really in-depth after several months review of Apple Pencil, and she drew it with the Apple Pencil. So it's not like bullet point A, bullet point B, H2 level one. It was basically her drawing and cartoon versions of her talking about, well, okay, yes, it kind of sucks that there's no eraser, but I find myself I got over it. And also the charging port is good, and you can also, to prevent yourself from losing the tip, you can magnetically click it into the magnets that are on the iPad. And it's just the sort of thing that it gets your attention. And even if you weren't particularly interested in the topic, you will read it anyway, because it's just such lively content and so nicely put together. And that, for me, that's something that I think is such a great goal. It's something that I've been pursuing for my entire career, that I want to create something that's interesting enough that whether you care about the topic or not, you're going to take a look at it. And as someone who's had an Apple Pencil for several months.
This is so awesome.
Yeah, it's... She's just aces.
Renee, is she an artist, or is she just kind of?
She
an
wears
amateur?
Many hats, Leo. I mean, she can sing, she can do plays, she can act, she can draw, she can roller skate, just everything.
Yeah, I mean, you know what she's really good at is pictures of herself.
She's a good cartoonist.
She is. She does. I mean, that character is really great. I really like it. This is a very good review for something like the pencil, isn't it? That's a unique situation.
The feedback we got is that no one wants her to do anything but these from now on.
Yeah. Like, can all of your reviews just be drawn? Thank you very much.
And this is what I'm talking about. This is people couldn't even get the pencil like the first month. And they might have forgot. They might have lost that sort of, oh, it's brand new. It's only $100. I'll buy it. And now that's 3 months later, they're like, oh, maybe I don't know. Maybe I don't even use a pencil that much. And now later on is the time when they'll start looking for information like this. And a piece like this will just absolutely lay out. Here's what I've been using this for 2 or 3 months. I'm demonstrating to you that I am an artist. So it's not as though I'm just someone who's you know, drawing pictures of poop emojis with a magic marker tool, and so I can give you a really good in-depth and informed thing. This is the sort of thing where a year from now people are still going to want to take a look at this to learn, especially as new iPads come out that use the Apple Pencil.
This is really, really great.
Just epic. Yeah.
So speaking of review units, I guess Apple's event, according to the rumor mill, is a week from next Monday, almost 2 weeks from today.
21st.
21st. And that means you guys will get your invites if you get one next week, right? Usually it's a week ahead of time. No invites yet, right?
No.
Not that I've heard of.
No.
Not in time to get your hotel or your plane or anything, and it doesn't matter.
And, yeah, of course. Why should we give you a lead? Any lead
time? That's the great thing about Apple. You will have your frequent flyer miles available for vacations and things like that because you're not going to be able to use them all.
That's why they do that.
They want to make sure that you can go to – you'll have them accrued enough that you can actually afford to get that free flight to Paris to spend some little time for yourself.
Yeah.
And my guess it'll be like a town hall thing because if it was moved around, then it has to be a venue that Apple can move around. And if it's a smaller event, then they have that facility on campus. That's much easier for them to sort of coordinate and control.
And soon.
That's also the vibe I'm getting for the content. It feels like more of a town hall event than of a get 800 people cheering minimum plus whoever jaded ink stained wretches are typing as their people are talking.
In about a year, probably in time for... if they do a spring event next year, certainly in time for the iPhone 8 announcement, we'll be going to the Apple campus. And they just put the lid on it. They put the lid on it. Look at this giant carbon fiber lid.
It has orbital abilities like Wally.
Oh, my gosh.
That is the largest, according to Apple, freestanding carbon fiber roof ever made.
The renderings of it? I'm just like,
It's made in Dubai.
the home of stupid architecture, Dubai.
Yeah,
I would downplay that.
Yeah, I wouldn't make. Yeah, but they were the only people who knew how to do it. Premier Composite Technologies.
You know how many McLarens gave their lives for that roof?
The circular roof is made up of 44 identical radial panels.
I was more thinking about like all the workers who were like sealed inside there, so that the secrets of the mothership would not be revealed outside.
Never escape. This is not the whole campus. This is just that theater. That will be the new venue for Apple events. It is a 1,000-seat theater with 360-degree views of the campus and then stairs down to the event area, which is underground.
Yeah, sort of like the New York Apple Store. You go in and then go down.
80 tons. It's 44 identical panels. There it is. There's another picture of it. 70 feet long, 11 feet wide. All connected to a central hub positioned in the middle. And I guess they assembled the whole thing before dropping it on the...
The 2018, do we get Apple Campus S? Is that how this works now?
I was wondering if like each one of those glass panels has one of those like little laminated plastic things on a tab you have to pull off like on the iPhone.
To protect it. Wow, that is so sweet. That is just... It must be fun for the guys and gals building this to be there watching this.
Yeah.
Largest.
These big construction projects are so cool because if you go back, the gimbal they had to build a really complicated gimbal just to lower that thing in. And that thing is installed, that other piece of metal will be recycled. Even though a whole bunch of engineering went into just building this ring so they could crane it in.
Yeah.
And I'll be interested to see if they do. I can only imagine that they are creating a bunch of behind the scenes of how it was built. Because a lot of times, not only are you building very specific items for this bit, but sometimes very specific machines to build, you know, stuff at this level. And so it'll be interesting to see if anything was developed, you know. But the renders just look stunning. You know, and obviously we fully expect it to look like the renders. So just looks amazing.
Where did Mashable get these images? Courtesy Apple. So
yeah, those were the original renders, I think.
Yeah, but then the pictures of the actual installation were distributed by Apple to Mashable. So
and you think Apple's now going to be probably, you know, every event once this opens, you know, every Apple announcement is going to be most likely coming from here. Maybe WWDC will be the one time they come out of the spaceship, and you can just see how much influence it could have on folks when you just walk into something.
Yeah, you want to awe the press as they walk in, make them feel small and unimportant.
They were also doing insane things. Like for the last iPhone event, they paid millions of dollars to put air conditioning into that venue because there just wasn't any in there. So they installed temporary air conditioning.
Nice.
It's a ridiculous staging that they all basically throw away at the end of it. And at least this will be
reusable. I think I will never, ever be allowed inside.
Never say never, Leo.
That's life. No, I don't even want to go now.
I got invited to an Apple event once.
I used to get invited to every Apple event. I don't know what happened, but
I think it was the Skype session.
I don't, you know, people say that. I don't think so.
Well, that was the last one, wasn't it? Was that the last one?
Just coincidence. Yeah.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
That was the last one I got to go to was the original iPad announcement. But you know what? I feel grateful that I got to see all of this, almost all the Steve Jobs announcements. Mm-hmm. That was, you know, that's really why you want to go. I see it as well now from my seat here watching the stream as I would if I were in the studio, in the theater. So I'm fine. I don't want to drive to all the way to San Francisco.
I have to admit, I'm really fine with just watching the stream.
I'm fine. It's fine. I would love to go to this theater, this new theater, when it opens at one point, if you're listening, Apple. I'm not anti-Apple. I'm not. Our show today, by the way, is very timely, brought to you by Gazelle, because, yes, we were pretty sure in 2 weeks there's going to be a new iPhone. You know what happens when the new iPhone comes out? Well, two things happen. First of all, your existing phone drops in value. Well, it's been dropping in value since the day it came out. That's what happens. So now would be a very good time to go to gazelle.com and lock yourself into a 30-day quote. Now, you're really not locked in. They're locked in. They're promising you that for the next 30 days, they will pay this amount for your old iPhone. So you don't have to decide now. You can wait till the new phone comes out, decide if that's what you want, get it, transfer your data over, and then pull the trigger. Gazelle will ship it for you for free. They'll send you a box, pay the shipping on anything worth more than a buck. They don't just buy iPhones. They buy iPads. They buy tablets from a lot of manufacturers, including Samsung, Google, Microsoft. So that's one of the things that happens when a new iPhone's announced. The other one is a lot of people sell their old iPhones. So this is a great time to go to Gazelle, or will be soon a great time to go to Gazelle to buy. Yeah, they sell the best stuff they get back to you after they put it through their rigorous 30-day inspection to make sure it's in great shape. They also give you a 30-day return policy. And now they're making it even easier to buy on Gazelle. They provide financing on everything from Affirm, and you can do that in the checkout. You just select financing with Affirm, give them basic information, you'll get approved instantly. You can pay in 3, 6, or 12 months through bank transfer, check, or debit card. Boom, just like that. It's all within. You don't have to exit the site. They also offer 12-month warranties for cell phones and iPads. Those come from Assurance Solutions, and they cover water damage and cracked screens and hardware defects and everything. So this is really nice. You don't have to, but you can. I love that. Help is available 24/7 to process claims or return your device should you have a problem. Don't miss out on getting the best value on certified pre-owned devices at gazelle.com. To buy or to sell, it's Gazelle, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E. And the time to do that is right now as we approach a new iPhone. I like it that they're splitting up the iPhone announcements to twice a year. iPhone SE, any new rumors? I think we've covered this all. We mentioned last week that the new iPad won't be an Air. They'll call it a Pro. It'll be Air size, 10.9 inches, but it will support the Pencil.
Yeah, all that stuff is marketed. I mean, they can lock in any name they want up until the very last minute.
That could all change, yeah.
Yeah, but the idea is that the iPhone, whatever, 5 SE, just the iPhone SE, is that people still love 4-inch iPhones. Even if it's only 9 or 10%, that's still tens of millions of people. And just like with the iPod Touch, if you can give those people an incredible experience by putting in an A9 and putting in a new EyeSight camera and doing those things, then why wouldn't you do it? It makes them happy. It allows you to have different screen sizes so you can segment your market a little bit. It gives you differentiation between your flagships, and really everybody benefits. And by the same token, you add the features that everybody loves about the iPad Pro. But some people don't want that size. It's too big for them. So you put all that into the 9.7 inch form factor. And whether that's an Air 3 or a Pro is, again, marketing decision. But those features are what matter to people, and giving it to them in the best way possible is what matters to Apple.
Yeah.
I think for me, we're going to buy a bunch of iPhones for our employees, and we're about to update them. We had a whole bunch of older ones that are now, the batteries aren't working anymore. And so we're going to upgrade a bunch of them, and it's just much easier if it didn't cost quite so much. You know, I'd love to say that I'm going to get everyone a 6S Plus, but probably not. If you're listening, if my guys are listening, probably.
Do we know what these are going to cost?
They're usually less. That slot, if Apple keeps the slot the same, and they've been usually very good about that, it starts at $450.
$450 bucks unlocked. That's a good price.
And for me, the big thing is just the camera, because we actually have very business uses for it. We're at a lot of sites that we have to, you know, take pictures of and so on and so forth. So if the camera is close to the 6S, which it sounds like it's going to be, to me, it's kind of an automatic. And I think I could imagine a lot of companies, you know, issuing phones that are a little smaller as well.
Plus, it fits in my tiny clutch.
a lot of companies have been covering a lot of different bets that way. One of the other interesting things is if Apple decides to not even bother putting a digit on that new phone if they just simply call it the SE, which would sort of track with what they've been doing with the iPad. A couple years ago, they decided to try to stop calling it the iPad 3, the iPad 4, the iPad 5, and simply say, here is, we're going to describe what the role of this thing is, no matter what hardware we put into it year after year after year. There's certainly an incentive for them to do that with, to keep a number with their prestige iPhone, because part of the reason why iPhones sell so well is that society can shame you into saying, oh, you have the iPhone 5. Oh, 5 is a lower number than 6, isn't it? Oh, that's too bad.
Oh, that's good. That's right. Yeah.
But the purported SE phone, it's not there for people to be impressed with the phone that you got. It's a phone that's going to support a specific role in the lineup. So maybe they'll just simply say, we'll just call this the SE, and every year or so we'll keep bumping it up. It also reduces expectations that there's going to be a new one each and every year, which, again, doesn't really work towards Apple's interest. I mean, if they don't have a real need or desire, or they don't think they can really get those first adopters to convert to second generation or third generation hardware people, you may as well just simply say that we have this one product mark and we just keep updating the hardware.
Like the iPod Touch, I think it was, what, 3 years? It went from an A5 to an A8?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I could definitely see something where it's every other year or every third year that they update the SE, you know, I think that especially if you look at folks that aren't going to buy it outright and are, you know, going to theoretically possibly get it for free, you know, waiting for their 2 year terms to add up could make a lot of sense as well.
New watch bands.
Pretty excited about that.
Yeah. what is this? So as we watch, we're reading tea leaves here, but new betas came out for all the stuff, mm-hmm. right? Are we going to expect anything, announcements on the 21st about new OSs? Will we see a new OS?
Well, iOS? 9.3. iOS 9.3, Apple TV OS 9.2.
Will those come out on the 21st, you think?
Yeah, I mean, one of two things. It depends if we see the Golden Master earlier than the final versions, but Apple typically does a Gold Master on that date and then announces the release date sometime when the devices ship.
Got it.
That way developers can test the final version.
But there'll only be one new device. They're not going to ship new watches, new television, Apple
TV. No, well, there's going to be two. There's going to be the smaller iPad Pro, the 9.7-inch iPad Pro, and the iPhone SE.
So that would be a reason to do iOS for sure.
And it's a good demo. Like if Craig gets up there and does night shifts on the iPhone and does education for the iPad.
Yeah.
Craig, now a published author, Federighi.
Published author, Craig Federighi.
Hope he's enjoying that $732 check he got.
Supreme Court declined to review the decision against Apple in the publishing antitrust suit. Apple must comply with a settlement it reached in 2014 with the states. $400 million it'll pay to the ebook consumers. I don't know how we're going to get that money, but $20 million to the states, $30 million in legal fees. So a total judgment of $450 million. And it's over. I mean, the Supreme Court said we're not going to overturn it. So that's done.
Can't take it to The Hague.
Let's take it to The Hague. You know, the smoking gun was Steve Jobs' own emails and statements. At the Apple event to introduce the iPad, he said, why would you buy a book through the iBook store for $14.99 when the same item's available on Amazon for $9.99? Or somebody asked him that. And Jobs paused and with a knowing nod responded, the price will be the same.
And he stroked his little tiny white cat.
We shall ensure. That was kind of... publishers are actually withholding their books from Amazon because they're not happy, he said. And because... here we come. You know what, for it's not chicken feed, $500 million almost, but it's doable. I wish they could pay with those euro dollars they have stored up somewhere. That would probably be very nice for them. Do we want to talk about this secret meeting?
I don't know. I'm Canadian, Leo. You have to explain it to me. I don't understand what happened.
I don't understand it either. And I don't even think it's important. It was an island, a private island off the coast of Georgia. The American Enterprise Institute held their annual World Forum. Tim Cook was there. So was Larry Page from Google, Sean Parker, Elon Musk. So we're
on a private island off the shore of Georgia. What is happening? This,
look at that.
No, I was in a much worse island than that.
Yeah. Sea Island, Georgia. A bunch of Republicans, including Mitch McConnell, Karl Rove, Paul Ryan, Tom Cotton, Corey Gardner, Tim Scott, Rob Portman, Ben Sasse. I don't see any...
The Illuminati.
I don't see any Democrats here.
Well, all the tech guys.
Yeah, and the tech guys, right. The guy who holds the owns the island, Philip Anschutz, is a billionaire, a GOP donor. He was, oh, wait a minute, Democratic Rep John Delaney was there, and the publisher of the New York Times, Arthur Sulzberger. And apparently, according to Bill Kristol, a specter was haunting the World Forum. The specter of Donald Trump. There was much unhappiness about his emergence. By the way, that is a referral to a kind of a tip of the hat, an homage to Karl Marx's Communist Manifesto. There was much unhappiness about his emergence, a deal of talk, some of it insightful and thoughtful about why he's done so well, and many expressions of hope that he would be defeated.
Talk about someone who's going to visit The Hague.
I don't, you know what? I've been to the Bohemian Grove. And much of what happens at these so-called events where the Illuminati gather to decide the future of the world is heavy drinking, and not a lot of grab ass, not much peeing on trees, that kind of thing. I think we imagine more stuff gets done and then actually does. Apple's go ahead.
When I hear about conferences like this, I worry more about like the stuff that happens behind the scenes at like WWDC.
Yeah.
Where it's not the stuff that's on the agenda. It's you happen to get a drink with someone else who's happened to be looking for a place to get a drink. And then you sit down and then you start talking to each other and a new idea forms that would not have formed otherwise. And when Karl Rove is part of the group, a lot of bad ideas can happen. A lot of people with way too much money can make bad things happen.
All right, Tim. Apparently, Tim Cook got in a heated conversation with a congressperson about the encryption thing. Who cares? I don't even know why I brought it up. Apple has a new Twitter account, Apple Support, very popular. It was helping thousands of people in its first day. So there. I don't know what else to say about it. I'm seeing all these numbers. I don't know if it's important. Anybody, are you all following Apple Support?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great, it's an interesting idea, and it looks to me like it launched off of the Apple Music support that they were doing, and it's a really interesting thing because they've proven that if you can fulfill the social promise, like if you can cater to a large number of people and do it relatively quickly and with good humor and a real human element to it, then you can make a deep customer connection, and that's the sort of thing Apple people expect from Apple, but they've never had like a corporate Twitter account or anything like that in the past. And this, I don't know, they had the iTunes accounts for a long time and then the Apple Music account. And this seems like a really good step forward for them.
186,000 followers, 9,000 tweets. They've probably got a team of 100 people doing this. I mean, this
they're using that software. I forget what it's called. If you'll see it when you scroll down, it's like something fire that lets you do sort of high level social engagement stuff.
You know what's awesome is it's got a lot of tips. You probably should follow it just because of all these tips. You know, and the notes app
it's called Sprinklr. Sprinklr.com.
Sprinklr.
And it's the typical sort of stuff. It's the typical sort of stuff where if you have a complaint and you add include Apple Support, if you click on the Tweets and Replies tab, you'll see them talking to a whole bunch of people about, glad you love your MacBook. We're happy to help with the battery issue. DM us with your serial number to get started.
Yeah, see, if you just look at the tweets, there aren't that many. But if you look at the tweets and replies, they've been busy.
Exactly.
Busy.
And it's like Renee said, it's a good idea chiefly because you got to go where the people are. You can't make them go to a support message board as thick with thieves as that place is. You have to, if people are expecting to, the only place to get a complaint filed about your airline or your cable company now is to @tweet them. And so they got to be where the people are. It's not a natural fit for Apple. I mean, I wouldn't have said that this is a company that would obviously have done that, because here is a place where you can actually, again, click on that tab in the Twitter client and see here's everything that everybody is complaining about.
Normally, it's going to be, you see that, yeah.
Well, it's going to be really valuable, because it's part of the value of this kind of public support is that if you're having a Wi-Fi problem, if you're having a cabling issue, you get to see how many other people seem to be having cabling issues. And unlike some of the forums that are on Apple.com, they're all really, really useful, but they're not really official. They're just users helping users. And here you're seeing Apple at least being aware of. You see the stuff that Apple is definitely aware of, and that could be super helpful.
They're also using the hashtag Apple support, which is interesting. Yeah. So
it's 5 a.m. to 8 p.m. 7 days a week, too, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
Pacific time.
So hashtag Apple support if you want to kind of keep track of the conversation around Apple support even. Very interesting.
Next time I live tweet Amazing Race, I'm definitely hashtag, unless definitely hashtagging them in so that they can have some entertainment as well on a Friday night.
Anything else we want to talk about before we take a break and go to our tips of the week? 23 new flyover locations in Apple Maps.
Yeah. Transit directions in time for South by Southwest in Austin.
Perfect. Anybody going to South by?
I forgot it was on this year.
I'll be there talking about VR on Friday.
Oh, cool. Nice. Are you doing any work down there, streaming anything we ought to know about?
Nope. I'm just talking about VR. I'm going to come down and speak at one event and then probably that night be back here. So I thought I'd do more, but it always turns out that way. I'm always just in and out.
Google has updated its Photos app for iOS. Live photos now work. You can use Split View. And iPad Pro support built in. That's nice.
Really slick. I really encourage people to at least try it out if you haven't tried Google Photos before. It's I'm not an opponent of Apple Photos. I think Apple Photos is really, really super. But one of the nice things about Google Photos, particularly with this new update, is that it really does feel like what Apple Music was trying to do, which is to give you sort of this live experience and this live connection to your media. Where you launch it and there's just a stack of cards that is walking you through. Here's what we did with this photo here. And here's something new feature that we've added. And oh, by the way, on this year, this time 2 years ago, here are pictures that you were doing. It's actually fun every few days for me to actually just check in with that and see what's waiting for me, what movies are waiting for me. They've added some new stabilization features where I'm often like bracketing photos, for instance. So I'm just taking like overexposed, underexposed, stuff like that. But it will line up every single photo to a common element. And so I have this little animated GIF in which all the buildings are the same, all the statues are the same, but you see people moving in and out. And I'm like, wasn't I clever to do that? I'm definitely going to save that, pretend that was my idea. So I love the front face of this where it's not, here is your albums, here is the last eight that you have uploaded. It's cards, a stack of cards simply says, here are things we'd like to tell you about your photo, the photos that have been added and what we've done with it and things you'd like to explore. And I'm just, it's almost as good a time waster as Instagram for me because I just want to see this guy Andy Natko took photos of, and my goodness, isn't he talented?
Yeah, that's thanks the assistant all the tab. Stuff they've done. Yep. Yeah, and then they're still doing the stories, which are this was an automated story that it did Lisa and I went to Mendocino last week. Weekend.
That kind of stuff makes it compelling because it's delightful and just enjoy the experience.
Yeah,
I heard they also updated Google Docs, and I haven't tried it yet, but it's been a dumpster fire on iPad Pro just because it crashes and doesn't really support any of the features. So hopefully that's been fixed as well.
I haven't modified this, but it's really kind of amazing what it does just automatically out of nowhere.
So. I'm so glad that Apple is sort of like shaming older apps. Because the time I was using my iPad Pro like in bed and like updating a doc for a podcast I'm doing later tonight. And that's right. I forgot to add that thing to this Google Doc we're using. And the moment that after using this iPad for like 3 or 4 hours, like writing actual like columns and stuff like that. And so I'm in Google Docs. And so I click the edit button and this tray of marshmallows scrolls up because it's the old fashioned keyboard.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, you must be. Everyone at Google who works on this app, you must be so embarrassed every time that happens everywhere.
My new job makes me use Google Sheets constantly, and I was using it on the airplane. I've always used my iPad Pro on the airplane. It just crashed every few minutes. Luckily, Google's good at saving state, but it would just crash, and I'd launch it again and edit a cell, and it crashed, and I'd launch it again and edit a cell. And I couldn't do split screens. I usually keep Slack open on the side while I work, and I couldn't do that because it doesn't support it, and I just wanted to set it on fire.
It's so super painful every time I love my iPad Pro. It's one of the best computers I have ever bought, full stop. And I am, it's heartbreaking when I see an app that doesn't take full advantage of split screen and split view and all these, and the new keyboard and all the other features. There's a, I wish that there's a wonderful new word processor or an update to an old word processor that is going to be released tomorrow. Unfortunately, I'm still under embargo. But I've been using this like as my day-to-day word processor, and it's just such a joy to use, even compared to the same app on my Mac and other apps that are on my Mac. And it really does show you all the potential of this device when you have a creator who is willing to treat it like a first-class device. And so that's why it just breaks your heart when you want to slide over and just, like Renee said, have Slack going in another column, or as I'm usually doing, having a Chrome in a column, so yeah. I could do some fact checking as I'm going, and like, okay, I can slide it in and then I'll have to slide it back.
And I'm not being mean to Google. I'm telling you how important your software is to me, Google. Right. So I'd really appreciate it if you get those iOS engineers to fix that up.
They'll get to it. They'll get to it. But, oh, goodness, they really need to get to it now.
Well, and I think that you know, I've found myself, at first it was kind of like my mobile thing. And now my iPad Pro is my preference for doing things like working on presentations and Keynote, because I can open up notes and I can draw ideas of what I'm going to put in there and then copy it and put it in there, you know, really quickly. Like, and having both of those just kind of open and being able to draw really quickly on the screen and figure out, okay, this is how I'm going to do this and this is what this is going to look like, I think has, you know, that whole like interaction between the drawing, the touch, the, you know, all the bits and pieces is something that for me is actually better on an iPad than it would be on a big machine. And that's been a very slow transition for me.
I'm doing my own, like, I'm not doing it as a cartoon, but I'm doing my own, like, Serenity Caldwell-style new piece on the iPad
That's
Pro.
That's going to be the new thing. That's the new web. Yeah. The new web is just going
to
be all...
I'm going to do a Caldwell.
I kind of want to, because, like, both Serenity and I are taking this, like, online class by Danielle Corsetto, who's just a wonderful illustrator. And so I'm doing a lot more drawing than I used to, but I'm like, no, Andy, you're having fun. You're enjoying this. You can even share some of your sketches on Twitter and Instagram. You are not ready to publish any of this as journalism yet. But I'm writing this like 6 months on. Like, this is not, I wrote one piece that was like a month or a month and a half after it was released and was positive. But this one is like, I've rewritten the first paragraph like two or three times. So I'm like, tone it down. you can be sincere, you can be enthusiastic, but tone it down. people are going to be on Google Street View trying to see, is there like Andy's kind of crap beater car, but then a brand new like Tesla with an Apple bow on the back of it in his driveway, if you publish that intro? Because like I said, I rarely have been as enthusiastic about a computer as I have been about the iPad Pro. It's just the perfect computer for me.
Anything else to say before we take a break and come back with your tips of the week? I think we've covered the main points of the week. We will have our picks of the week coming up in just a second with Andy Anacco, Renee Ritchie, Alex Lindsay. But first, a word from LegalZoom. You know, I was watching the O.J. Simpson TV show, which I'm enjoying, The People versus O.J. It's total tabloid, right? But John Travolta does this great job playing Robert Shapiro, who led the Dream Team, O.J.'s defense team. And I'm looking up on Robert Shapiro. After that, you know what he did? He founded LegalZoom.com. I had no idea.
Wow.
Yeah. So Shapiro, who was Hollywood, you know, like the Hollywood lawyer, and a bunch of other lawyers sat down and said, you know what we want to do? We want to make it easy and affordable for people to get legal expertise online. And LegalZoom was born. It's been more than 10 years. I know, because I used LegalZoom to set up Twit. It was at the time, I think, $60 to get the LLC. And that was awesome. Kevin Rose told me to do that. You can go to LegalZoom. It's National Small Business Month. So you can go to LegalZoom right now and get started with an incorporation or an LLC to celebrate. You also save money on the basics to get up and running. And after your business is set up, LegalZoom can help with a lot more. We just set up a new LLC. Lisa and I just set up a kind of an ad agency. So we're separating the advertising out from the content, artisanal. And we did it all with LegalZoom. It was so easy. And with the LegalZoom business plan, the business legal plan, you can get legal advice for your business from independent attorneys in 48 states. for a pre-negotiated flat rate. So it's affordable. So you get everything. And you get access to NDAs and lease agreements. And we've really loved this. LegalZoom is not a law firm. Instead, you pay a low monthly fee. You don't get charged by the hour. So you know exactly what you're going to pay up front. It's really great. Really, really great. You get the forms you need, the step-by-step process. A lot of the paperwork you can do yourself. And if you need legal advice, they've got this legal plan, too. It's so great. National Small Business Month. You've been wanting to do it. Now's the time. Save time and money and start your own business today and run it thereafter through LegalZoom.com. One thing we say, though, don't forget to use MBW in the referral box at checkout to save. And, of course, let them know that you heard about it on Mac Break Weekly. LegalZoom.com. MBW is the offer code. LegalZoom.com. Do it today. I encourage you. It's been a great 10 years. I never thought I'd want to start my own business, and I had no idea. And I was really fortunate. I went to Kevin Rose, who'd already started quite a few, and I got advice from him, and he gave me very good advice, and it's been great. We did the trademarks that way too for Twit and the Twit logo and all of that. Probably wouldn't have done anything without it. LegalZoom.com, offer code MBW. Time for our picks of the week, and I'm going to give Scooter X, our chat mod, one of our chat mods in the chat room, a tip of the hat for this pick of the week. I've used OWC's PCI Express flash storage, their SSDs, in the past to upgrade Macs, including the Mac I'm using right now. They've just introduced the Aura PCIe flash storage upgrades for MacBook Pros and MacBook Airs. This, you know, the best upgrade you can make to any computer is to put a solid state drive in it. And now that SSDs have gotten so inexpensive, it's taken a while for Apple to to lower the price when you buy it up front. But it's not so hard, believe it or not, in a MacBook or a MacBook Pro or a MacBook Air to upgrade to as much as a terabyte of flash storage. And these Aura drives are really good. I've been using one. Is it in this machine? I can't remember which one. But the prices are good, and I'm a big fan of Otherworld Computing. They're at MacSales.com. And one of the nice things they give you when you take out your old SSD, they give you a little enclosure that you can put it into. So now you have a USB 3 enclosure with your old 128 gigs or whatever. I carry it around. It's a really handy, like a little USB key. So there it is, MacSales.com. Little tip of the hat. I think we mentioned them. They're not an advertiser. I just feel like they really make great stuff for Mac people. Renee Ritchie, what's your pick this week?
So I have two, and they were sort of motivated by the news early on. Like we spoke about earlier, online backups are great. Things like Carbonite and Backblaze, all of those are great. Sometimes you just want to keep your stuff where you are, too. And there's sort of two options here, broad options that I like. One is super easy. I actually use both of these. So one is Apple's Time Capsule, and that it just looks just like an AirPort Extreme router. You buy it, you plug it in, you connect to it like any Wi-Fi router, but every night it just goes through and does first a big backup of all your stuff, and then an incremental backup of all your stuff. And if you have multiple Macs in your house, it can do backups of all of those. You just choose a storage size that makes sense to you, and they have, I think, 2 terabytes and 3 terabyte options. And then it just quietly, in the background, keeps versioned copies of your computer. So if anything does go wrong, if you delete a file and want that file back, or if you get an infection and you want to roll back your entire computer, if you get a new computer and you want to just pull everything off of this, you have all that information really easily available to you. I've given these to several family members too, because it saves me having to drive over there to sort of fix their manual backup process or find out that the drive was unplugged 3 months ago and nothing was happening. So I'm a huge fan of these. If you are more sophisticated, I love this too. This is Super Duper, which is just an amazing backup.
I love it. Love it.
So great. I'm sure we picked it a dozen times before, but it's always worth mentioning.
Recommending again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All you do is like the free version you can plug in and you can just make a clone of your drive. I will pay fistfuls of money for this. And so I get the intelligent backups and I just plug it in and I have one that just backs up my iMac every night. And then kind of like what Alex says. I have a bigger drive that I do a copy of several machines once a month, and then I put it somewhere safe so that if anything ever does happen, I actually leave a copy at my mom's place because that made it was convenient enough that I could always get it in case of an emergency, and that's pretty offsite as well. And just it does its job at night. It schedules it automatically. As long as I don't do anything dumb and unplug the drive, it just works. And that to me, it's that kind of protection is just priceless. So recommend them both. Could not recommend
them more.
Very nice.
And I couldn't agree more. Let's go to Alex. Oh, one other thing. I shouldn't tell you about this, Renee. Okay. I was mentioning Kevin Rose and his, you know, he's the new CEO of Hodinkee. They've opened their mm-hmm. Hodinkee shop. And I know you have a little bit of a watch, Jones.
Oh, no. I love what Hodinkee does. They are such a great website.
They're now selling watches. But you know what? This is the one I really, there's a rare finds tab. I love this. And I thought Andy would love this. A Rolex wall watch clock with the Pan Am logo.
Goodness, that's beautiful.
It's sold out, which is good because it was $9,500.
And they have those stupid lugs that let you put any band on an Apple Watch. And I'm going to go there and just
They have straps and straps and straps. I and I know you're a strap fiend, strap hound.
There goes my retirement.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
No, they're a fantastic website.
Yeah, Hodinkee's great. I'm really glad they opened the store. So congratulations, Kevin. I didn't know about this, but somebody in the chat room mentioned it. Andy, I'm sorry. Let's do Alex Lindsay. We'll save Andy the best for last. Alex, well, not the best, but you know, the long.
Thanks, man.
No, you're the most expensive.
I am the most expensive. So my recommendation is the Blackmagic Micro Studio Cam. Now, this is an expensive pick, but it's not relatively expensive compared to other professional level cameras. So it's this little guy here, and this one's got some stuff on it. Sorry, this is the one that I have sitting in my office. And so this tiny little camera is a 4/3 4K video camera.
Ooh.
And I've just got this little Olympus 4/3 lens on it.
So it'll take any Micro Four Thirds lens.
Any Micro Four Thirds lens, and then you can also get a Micro Four Thirds to Canon adapter, which we use often. So you can put big Canon lenses on. You can also get what are called, for those in broadcast, B4 lenses. You can actually convert the B4 lens to this little guy. We almost put them. We had these box lenses for an event last week. 76X, you know, broadcast lenses, and we almost got one of these onto it. We just didn't have the adapter with us. Which would have been the funniest thing, because it's this giant lens, and then it just has this little camera. And it looks, I mean, the lens, you know, the chip looks great, but what really makes this just a great little camera. Now, it doesn't have a viewfinder, but you can always add one. And this is a wooden camera, makes these little exoskeletons that we put on them, put on all of them to make sure that, you know, we can mount anything we want to it. So, you know, other monitors and so on and so forth. But Blackmagic really made this. This is the geek's camera. You know, Blackmagic made this. So if you look at all these little connectors here, this is just connected to my camera here. And, you know, what I have here is I have PTZ control. So if I hook it to a pan, tilt, zoom head, I can control the head. Now, here's the important part. I can control the head from my switcher. So there's power. This is ref in, so you can sync the cameras. You can control a B4 lens. That's a standard broadcast lens. You control the lens. And that means that from the switcher, from my Blackmagic switcher, I can control the zoom and the focus and the aperture from the switcher, you know, and because you can log into your switcher from anywhere in the world, you can actually, you know, change the shading on a camera that's half, you know, in another part of the world, which we've done. And then Lank, so you could even control the camera, you know, with just the standard little Lank controllers that you can buy. And then, of course, there's this, which is the geekiest version, the thing. This is the S-Bus. Now, the reason the S-Bus goes in, you take a little receiver like this, and you plug your S-Bus in. So you plug your camera into this little receiver. And, just so you know, that means that you can control your camera with this. So this is, you know, so this is the S-Bus is made by Fubata. And so you can actually control aperture and you know, a lot of other things, through a controller here like this remotely. So again, it's the camera has been made to be hacked. You can either hack it through the switcher. You can hack, you know, we actually control the shading on these cameras with an Arduino powered controller. So, you know, a lot of this stuff is all built very, very, not open source, but definitely an open API that lets you have a lot of access to this thing. There's a company called Scaroff, I think out of Finland, that does a lot of these updates that we've started to buy a lot of. And so it's just a great little camera. It's my favorite. My favorite little camera that it's my, and generally my webcam. I had some setup issues this morning, but generally my webcam, it's pretty cool. So if you're looking for one to do geeky stuff with.
Just tell me when he's done.
And Leo, if I was building a new studio somewhere, and I was looking at the camera,
I can't hear you. I can't hear you.
I am not listening to you.
I'm not listening.
Because I would just say that, you know, they're pretty nice cameras that you could, you know.
Well, we could replace these cameras. Well, you know what? The truth is, it's going to cost us so much money to build this new studio that I don't really have money for new cameras.
Oh, there you go. And these cameras.
How much are those? Cameras,
Alex? These are like $1,200 each.
That's not much.
Bucks each. Yeah, exactly. It's.
We all need them, Alex.
Sorry?
No, you don't.
Do we all need them?
No, stop it. Don't listen to him. He's the devil.
Renee, I think you'll agree with me that if Alex is going to be using this camera. I mean, we were all using these Logitech 920s.
Now we have to all buy them.
I'm just worried that we won't have that consistent look from shot to shot to shot.
Not listening, not listening.
Yeah, you're talking, but I am not listening.
I was telling
talk
myself,
to the wallet.
Yeah, but I'm telling myself, but Andy, it uses micro four thirds lenses. You've got
plenty of those. Yeah.
Think how much, the lenses are the most expensive
part, Andy.
Exactly. It's just a box that you put light through. That's all the camera is.
It's photons. Photons are free.
They're pretty cool. We've been watching the development of these, and they've just gotten better and better and more interesting. And yeah, not buying them. so don't get your hopes up there, Jason. Clientus is going, 4K. Yeah, we should do. Someday we'll do our shows in 4K. But not this year. Andy Inako, let's wrap it up with Andy's always got something interesting.
I'll wait for a open box or scratch and ding
exactly.
sale on that camera.
Yeah.
I got a tip and a pick. Both of them are hopefully pretty quick. I love like using my camera and my phone as a camera as opposed to a snapshot camera. And I came across this kind of neat thing by accident. I was testing out. I had my phone like on a tripod mount like this for some stuff I was doing like in the park and stuff like that. And because I mean mine is this nice Redicam like metal one that doesn't let go. It's your phone is not gonna pop out of this thing for sure. And because I was occasionally hand holding it, I didn't want to take it on and off all the time. And then I found out this was like a month ago that. My goodness, with just like the stand like on this is a really nice grip for the phone. And I feel like I've got a good hold on it. I don't feel like I'm about to like drop it or someplace. It falls in the hand the way that I naturally do. Obviously, this is a lot chunkier than Johnny Ive would ever approve of for the thickness of a phone, but it's still compact enough that I could stick it in my pocket and take it out again. Also, the fact that it has a tripod mount at the bottom of it means that I can put one of these like tripod screw lugs on the bottom of it and have it like hanging to my side or have like a wrist strap on it. So again, I don't have to worry about dropping it or something like this. It's just such a comfortable way of holding this that now this is, if I know I'm going to be taking a lot of pictures over the course of the day, this is just, even if I don't have my tripod with me, this thing just stays on it. It's also kind of cool because the folks at LoomCube have an adapter so that you can mount the LoomCube light on the device itself. And so now this really does look like an old-fashioned, old-timey camera if you have now the second bracket on it. So I just there are companies like the folks who do there's some who's that company that does that really good at the Yolo Clip company. They have a system that costs $80 or $90 for adding accessories that work really nice. But I already have this cost $20 And like I said, it really helps me to hold this and use it like a regular camera. So I'm a really big fan of that. And I'm surprised that I've had this for like years. And this is the first time I've kind of twitched to that. The second thing, the actual pick is a Better Snap Tool, which is available on the Mac App Store. It's a really good windowing tool for Mac OS. We talk about how cool it is on the iPad Pro to be able to slide in an app and do split screen. And obviously the new version, the latest version of macOS has split screen. This has a couple of advantages over that. It allows you to, you just drag a window to the side of the screen and it will automatically snap to either one half the size of your screen and snap to the side, or one quarter the size of the screen and snap to that corner. So that's added functionality that Split View doesn't do in the latest version of macOS. The other thing is that you obviously have to have the latest version of macOS to have split screen going, whereas this will still work in 10.9 and previous. And it's really it really is a simple, but it's the iPad Pro really got me into this idea of I would like to have two apps dominating the entire screen at once. And when I'm doing podcasts, like when I'm doing the Material podcast tonight, I will have my show notes snap to one side of the screen. I will have Slack snap to the front quarter so I can talk to have us have a back channel with the other hosts. And then the other corner of the screen, I will have under that, I will have a Twitter just in case there are people who are mentioning things that we should talk about like during the show or a chat channel. And once you have the ability to very trivially have non-overlapping windows, you realize how much productive you can be when you don't have to always be cycling through windows all the time or preventing windows from overlapping from each other. And it's only this Better Snap Tool. It's been around for a long time and it's only $3. And that's some of the easiest money I've ever spent.
Very nice. Andy Iannocco, Chicago Sun-Times. Always a pleasure. And don't forget his podcast, Iannocco's Almanac. That's on the 5x5 network and Material, which is on, where's Material's on Replay.fm, right?
Relay.fm.
Relay, yes. Not Replay. Relay.fm, Mike Hurley's network. Great to have you as always, Andrew. Rene Ritchie, iMore.com. He does a few shows himself on the iMore podcast, including that great debug. Anything you want to plug?
We have the iMore 500th episode coming next week.
Hard to believe. Wow.
Yeah, we did two a week for the while when the iPad
first came
out. Yeah,
you're catching up with us.
Guys. Yeah. Wow. We're back to weekly after the iPad.
Actually, you just passed us. Yeah, we were only at 497.
So close, Leo.
Man, it's hard to keep up with Rene Ritchie.
We had Jamie Newberry on last week. She's just phenomenal on debug. She is the new COO of Martiancraft, and previously she was at Zappos and has done consulting for a lot of really awesome companies that she's not allowed to mention, but she does a lot about corporate culture and design, and it's just fantastic.
Cool. And Alex Lindsay at the Pixel Corp. Best thing to do if you want to know what Alex is up to is follow him on Twitter, AlexLindsay. What did Alex Lind say? That's what how I remember that.
Exactly. Yeah, and I'll be at two to three and at the Four Seasons, I think, talking about VR and golf of all things.
For South By in Austin.
At South By, yeah.
That's Friday.
Yep, I'll be there Friday. Probably Thursday night, I'll probably try to find somewhere to meet people. I'll tweet it out.
I really enjoyed South By, and we used to go down there every year, but it really turned out to be mostly just a big party.
And I always miss the party part because I always come for the interactive part, and so it doesn't get cool until the next. I mean, it's useful when I go, but it's not as cool as when you start having those big parties. And I just every time I think of South By Southwest, Leo, I just think of you.
I know, body surfing. Yeah,
crowd surfing with the live view.
Dummy, what a dummy I was.
It was great. That was good. That was good content.
It'll be something I'll look back on in my old age. Oh, wait a minute. That's right now. I remember body surfing when I was a young man.
Live streaming it.
Yeah. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC on Twit. You can watch live. Of course, we would love it. And you can come to the studio, too, if you're in the area. We're in Northern California, about an hour north of San Francisco. Just email tickets at twit.tv. We're going to be in this studio through probably the summer. I'm thinking a move in August or September. So if you've always wanted to see the Brick House, you probably should make your way out here in the next 7 or 8 months. Although, we're pretty much just taking everything and it'll look the same. moving it over to another place.
Are the bricks going?
Yeah, we don't know about that. So our project manager, who is a longtime construction guy, says, yeah, I don't know. You put a pick to those, they're going to break them. So what we're going to do is we're going to take high-res pictures of everything first, and then we're going to try to pry them off. If we can, then we'll move them. If we can't, which he seems, you know, at the way they're attached, because we mortared them onto the wall, you're never going to be able to get those off without breaking them. So what we're going to do is print vinyl wallpaper of the bricks and have you'll still be able to visit your brick. It just won't be made of brick. That's okay, right?
That's great. That's great continuity.
It's the next best thing. I would love to bring the bricks. We just didn't think ahead.
The bricks are no more, but the love and support are still there.
We could take the wall, but then what do you do?
Exactly.
now we got 20 feet of wall. I don't know what to do with that. So I'm trusting better minds than mine on this kind of thing. But at least we know we can do that. We'll do the wallpaper if we don't do the bricks themselves. I think that's good enough, right?
Yeah.
I feel bad, and I'm very grateful because all the people who donated made it possible to build this studio. And if you're saying, well, gosh, you know, but we're going to take almost everything that we built. All of this stuff was designed to be removed, as all TV sets are, and moved to another location, including the porthole wall and everything. So we're taking the big gear behind me, and all of that stuff will come. So, but that's costing so much. I don't have money to buy all new cameras.
It'll be just like home.
It will be. In fact, if you're watching, only, you know, a small percentage of our audience watches at all. So if you're listening, it will sound the same. Even if you're watching, it'll probably look pretty much the same. There'll be slight differences, but you
know, the acoustical signature, Mr. Laporte, is slightly different.
Actually, it's going to sound better because we are going to wall in the studio. One of the complaints people have is that we have an open studio and the offices are open and nobody can talk when we're working.
If you wall it in properly, Leo, you can get one of those new Dolby Atmos sound bars.
Oh.
All you need is the reflection surfaces.
Yeah, and then you'll be able to listen above you and below you. And that'd be great. Hey, thanks everybody for joining us. We'll see you next time. But now it's time to get back to work because break time is over.